I think Senator McCain is an inclusive leader who can return the party to unifying core principles.
I went to the Lambeth Conference, where I got to see a lot of bishops wearing very colorful frocks.
Welcome to This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Australia's government proposes same-gender couples' rights, lesbi-gay Republicans pick McCain over party platform, and the adventures of an ex-gay at Lambeth. All that and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Chris Wilson.
And I'm Donna Ann Ward.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending September 6, 2008. The Australian government introduced legislation in Parliament this week to grant a number of rights to same-gender couples and their families, but stressed that they would not be equivalent to marriage. The Labor government of Prime Minister Kevin Rudd strongly supports legislation passed in 2004 under the former Liberal government defining marriage as exclusively heterosexual. But the Same-Sex Entitlements Bill will remove discrimination against same-gender couples in some 68 Commonwealth laws involving 19 different government departments. The areas covered include Social Security, Medicare, immigration, taxation, educational assistance, veterans benefits, and elder care. A bill to remove discrimination in government pensions, or superannuation, was introduced earlier this year, but it's been stalled in the Senate. A report issued last year by the Federal Human Rights and Equal Opportunity Commission made more than 50 recommendations urging the reforms. It heard from dozens of same-gender couples during a series of hearings it held across the country, and concluded that at least 20,000 Australian lesbi-gay couples experience systematic discrimination on a daily basis. In announcing its introduction, Attorney General Robert McClellan said the legislation will not only remove discrimination against same-sex couples, it will also remove discrimination against their families, and most specifically, their children. McClellan said that the government expects the legislation to be enacted by mid-2009, but some MPs have expressed concerns that passage would undermine the unique status of heterosexual marriage in the country. LGBT advocates generally greeted the news favorably, while chiding the government for refusing to consider full marriage equality.
In the U.S., a New York judge this week rejected a challenge to Governor David Patterson's executive order requiring all state agencies to recognize same-gender marriages legally performed elsewhere. Patterson had cited New York court rulings involving same-gender couples that those marriages should be recognized under state law. In throwing out the lawsuit, filed by the right-wing Alliance Defense Fund and a handful of Republican lawmakers, Justice Lucy A. Billings of the State Supreme Court in the Bronx wrote that a same-gender couple's desire to wed represents a personal expression of emotional devotion, support and interdependence, and a public commitment. With that validity, she wrote, they expect equal treatment with other married couples. A contrary ruling, she said, would be antithetical to family stability. This was the first trial court-level decision on the issue. The plaintiffs say they'll appeal. New York's highest court has ruled that only the legislature can establish marriage equality in the state. But with nearby Massachusetts recently repealing an antiquated marriage law requiring residency, thousands of New York same-gender couples are expected to flock to the Bay State in the next few years to tie the knot.
In California, the only other U.S. state with marriage equality and no residency requirement, polls continue to report that a slim majority plan to vote against Proposition 8, a November ballot measure that would amend the state constitution and reverse the state Supreme Court-ordered right of same-gender couples to marry. Meanwhile, in a poll of likely voters taken this week in Florida, which has a constitutional same-gender marriage ban on its November ballot, 57% favor the measure, while 36% oppose it. The state constitution requires a 60% majority to amend it. Opponents warn that the proposal is so broadly written that it would also prohibit civil unions as well as domestic partner benefits currently offered in some jurisdictions. And in Arizona, the third U.S. state with a constitutional same-gender marriage ban on the ballot this November, its two Roman Catholic bishops have ordered a pastoral letter to be read in churches across the state this week supporting the measure. It says the amendment is in alignment with our deeply held moral beliefs regarding marriage. The Union for Orthodox Jewish Congregations of America also issued a statement to its Arizona congregation saying that the Torah and Jewish law affirms marriage only between a man and a woman. Evangelical churches throughout Arizona are also urging the faithful to support the amendment. According to public opinion polls, most people in the state oppose marriage equality, but they don't want to enshrine a ban in the Constitution.
In other news, 300 gay and lesbian police officers and staffers marched in the LGBT Pride Parade in Manchester, England on August 23rd. They came from 16 police forces around the United Kingdom. Sergeant Julie Barnes-Frank, coordinator of the Greater Manchester Police's Lesbian and Gay Staff Affiliation, told the Press Association that it was a record number and that there's never been anything like it in the world. England's most southwesterly county, Cornwall, saw its first Pride parade on the same day in the city of Truro. Some 600 people marched, and the Gay Police Association flag flew from the Truro police station. And in Canada, about 1,200 marchers and 34,000 spectators turned out for the 19th Pride Parade in Ottawa, Ontario, the following day. The march made stops at the Parliament buildings and the Federal Supreme Court, both of which played a role in Canada's legalization of same-gender marriage. Capital Pride spokesman Julian Lavoie told the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation that it's important for us to keep celebrating those victories, but noted that some inequalities remain.
A late August article on the website of U.S.-based Newsweek magazine called Don't Ask, Don't Tell, Do Kill described the many obstacles its reporters encountered in trying to prepare a story about gay people in Iraq. After weeks of inquiries, the magazine set up a meeting with Nadir, who helps run one of the safe houses for Iraqi gays that are funded by foreign activists. But the night before their meeting, Nadir was visited by the Mahdi militia, the armed wing of the organization led by Shiite cleric Muqtada al-Sadr, and he called it off. The article noted that Iraqi authorities scoffed at the subject when not scolding a reporter for even asking about it. No government official would agree to be interviewed, and the report said, the United Nations Human Rights Office, which has a big presence in Iraq, dodged the subject like a minefield. Gay men the magazine did manage to interview told of being thrown out of their homes and savagely attacked by religious extremists. Killing gays has become honorable in Iraq, the article said, and raping them is okay because it isn't considered a homosexual act. Only being penetrated or providing oral sex is. Nobody wants to talk about gays in Iraq, much less who is killing them, the report concluded. Changing Iraq's attitudes toward its gay minority may prove even harder than ending the war.
Back in the U.S., the Republican Party capped its four-day convention in St. Paul, Minnesota this week by officially nominating Senator John McCain of Arizona as its presidential candidate. That move was hardly a surprise, but McCain did jolt the pundits by picking little-known Alaska Governor Sarah Palin as his vice presidential running mate. Her selection virtually overshadowed other media coverage of the convention. Palin has been Alaska's governor for less than 2 years and previously served as the mayor of Wasilla, a small town of about 5,000 to 7,000 people. Republican commentators have said, with straight faces, that she has experience in international affairs because Alaska's most northwesterly border is close to Russia. Christian conservatives celebrated her selection. While it's the first time the GOP has put a woman on the ticket, feminists were not exactly applauding. Palin opposes abortion, even when a birth would be the result of rape. She also supported the teaching of creationism, opposes gun control and endangered species protections, and has pushed for oil drilling in environmentally sensitive areas. She's also embroiled in a state abuse of power scandal.
Not surprisingly, Palin has a poor record on LGBT issues. She opposes hate crimes legislation and supported the 1998 state constitutional amendment defining marriage as exclusively between one man and one woman. An insert in the bulletin of the Wasilla Bible Church, where Palin has reportedly prayed since she was a child, advertised a mid-September conference in nearby Anchorage, sponsored by the notoriously anti-queer group Focus on the Family, which claims to help homosexuals go straight. Early in her administration, Governor Palin vetoed legislation to overturn a 2005 state Supreme Court ruling that ordered domestic partner benefits for gay and lesbian state workers, not because she supported those benefits, but because her legal advisors told her it would be unconstitutional to deny them. She reiterated her opposition to the benefits in her reluctant veto message. The Republican Party platform was also not exactly queer-friendly. It calls for an amendment to the U.S. Constitution to define marriage as heterosexual only, and opposes gays and lesbians in the armed forces, claiming the incompatibility of homosexuality with military service. The platform also opposes what it calls activist judges, right-wing code for an independent judiciary that may sometimes issue relatively progressive rulings. While his running mate strongly supports it, McCain has opposed a so-called federal marriage amendment, but he's on record in support of state constitutional amendments to ban same-gender marriage. Citing McCain's opposition to the federal amendment, however, the National Lesbi-Gay Log Cabin Republicans has endorsed his candidacy. More about that in a moment.
And finally, according to broadcast reports, the Virginia delegation to the Republican convention didn't have traditional guidebooks to help them navigate the host city this week. A campaign official from the state lieutenant governor's office canceled an order for 150 of them because they included 6 to 8 pages highlighting the city's gay and lesbian night spots. An official wrote to Rake Publishing, which distributed the guide, saying that having a section dedicated solely to GLBT will be a big problem for many of our folks. We simply can't hand them out. Some Republicans, however, apparently use their gaydar to find those night spots without the guidebooks. Queer club owners in the St. Paul area reported better-than-usual business during the convention.
That's News Wrap for the week ending September 6, 2008. Written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Donna Ann Ward.
And I'm Chris Wilson.
We'll put on colorful clerical clothes and sneak inside the gates of the Anglican Communion's Lambeth Conference later in the program.
We believe in a strong defense, work, faith, service, a culture of life. Personal responsibility, the rule of law, and judges who dispense justice impartially and don't legislate from the bench.
Republican presidential nominee Senator John McCain came no closer than that to addressing LGBT issues in his September 4th acceptance speech at the GOP's National Convention in St. Paul, Minnesota. Backed by the largest lesbi-gay contingent ever and the first to be officially credentialed at the convention, the board of the Log Cabin Republicans voted 12-2 to endorse McCain. Their president, Patrick Salmon, explained to CNN anchor Soledad O'Brien why the organization could look past the Republican platform's call for a federal amendment banning same-gender marriage.
Well, I think Senator McCain is an inclusive leader who can return the party to unifying core principles. In recent years, the party got off track by focusing on divisive social issues. 4 years ago, President Bush ran for re-election trying to use gay and lesbian people as a wedge issue by supporting the federal marriage amendment. Senator McCain is a much different kind of candidate. He's bringing the party together. He's someone who courageously voted against the federal marriage amendment and paid a price for it among social conservatives. So I'm optimistic, and Log Cabin is certainly proud to endorse Senator McCain. We're not going to agree on every issue, but at the same time, he's someone who can bring the party together, and I think move it in a direction that's more inclusive.
You mentioned the wedge issue, and I guess I would say, well, you talk about Senator McCain, on the other hand of that is what is clearly and explicitly called for in the platform for the Republican Party is a constitutional amendment that would define marriage as a union between a man and a woman, a constitutional amendment. Obviously, Senator sure. John McCain, as the nominee, official later, of course, has signed off on that platform and is in agreement with that platform. That doesn't give you pause?
Oh, no. I mean, certainly I disagree with a lot of what's in the platform, certainly what's in there related to gay rights, but I think the platform is largely symbolic. The day after it's passed, people don't pay attention to it. The important thing is that Senator McCain opposes the federal marriage amendment, opposed that constitutional amendment. I'd rather have a candidate that agrees with me than a platform that agrees with me. It's also important to point out that among rank-and-file Republicans, there's much stronger support for gay rights. Even among convention delegates, the CBS News poll showed that 49% of the GOP delegates favor civil unions or marriage equality for gay and lesbian people. 77% of Republicans don't think that a business should have the right to fire someone because of their sexual orientation. 64% of Republicans think that gays and lesbians should be allowed to serve in the military. Certainly there's a loud and vocal segment of our party among social conservatives who are hostile to gay rights, but among rank and file Republicans, I think there's much broader broader support for gay rights than people think.
But for all those statistics that you just cited for me, if you were to go look on the Democratic side, we'd probably see those numbers significantly higher. So it seems to some degree that Democrats would have more in common with your core issues and your core values than the Republicans. So why not support Democrats?
Well, I agree with 90% of what the Republican Party supports. I don't think government is the solution to every problem. I think we need an aggressive foreign policy that takes on the terrorists. I think we need fiscal responsibility. I don't think we need government intruding too deeply in health care. I think we need a market-based approach to health care reform. I think that the economy, we need limited government. We need businesses to have the ability to not have interference from government. So across the board, I'm supportive of Republican issues. At the same time, the Republican Party isn't where it needs to be on gay and lesbian issues. I'm the first to admit that, but I think it's important to work from inside the party to make it better, because ultimately gay rights would be impossible to achieve unless there's support from both Republicans and Democrats.
That was Log Cabin Republicans President Patrick Salmon at the Republican National Convention with CNN's Soledad O'Brien.
Hello, this is Judge David Young. You are listening to This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine.
Not many outsiders got an inside view of the once-a-decade Lambeth Conference of Anglican Bishops in mid-August. Ex-gay activist and performance artist Peterson Toscano brought his unique perspective to the event and shared his observations with This Way Out correspondent Heather Kitching.
You just spent the last couple of weeks hanging out in England, observing activities around the Lambeth Conference.
It was kind of a whirlwind tour. I actually was in Malta before then with a group of LGBT Catholic folks.
Wow.
Who are very courageous. They started a group there in a very Catholic, anti-gay, heterosexist world, and they're doing amazing work. Then I was on the island of Guernsey, one of the Channel Islands, and got to talk with a lot of evangelical leaders about LGBT concerns. And then I went to the Lambeth Conference, where I got to see a lot of bishops wearing very colorful frocks, telling gays they should not be ordained. Although it was awfully tempting after seeing them in their frocks. I wanted to be ordained, and I'm a Quaker.
So did you actually get to watch the Lambeth Conference? This is something that you can actually, as a member of the public, go and see? Or did you get some kind of special dispensation?
Well, you only could get in the inner sanctum if you are a bishop. And then there are some events that are for bishops and bishops' spouses. But for the rest of the public, you really don't get in. But one thing that was very interesting, I was on the official fringe program on campus there. So they had the main events, then they had official fringe events. And then, of course, there were some unofficial fringe events going on as well.
Okay,
so I was there on campus, living in the dorms right by next to bishops and seeing them in the lobbies and connecting with them. But I couldn't go into any of the main bishop sort of talks. That was just for bishops.
So the fringe events were sort of extracurricular Lambeth Conference activities?
Exactly. Okay. And they were part of the official program that were well advertised and right there on campus. So it just, fringe was that it was just not the main tent events that were going on.
Okay.
I think I was the only kind of theatery sort of person there. Most of the people were speakers that were there. And then I was the oddball performer and Quaker.
So you got to perform your, did you do the ex-gay, you know, doing time in the homo, nomo, I can't remember how it
homo,
ends.
Homo, nomo, halfway house.
Halfway house, that's it.
I didn't do the whole play. I did excerpts from it because I knew I'd have a mixed crowd, and I felt that they needed to hear a little bit about my personal story, about why I spent 17 years and over $30,000 on three continents attempting to de-gay myself. And so my hope was to let them see that I was very sincere in my desire to change, but I was under false pretenses often because I didn't have enough information and I had some of the wrong information. Mm-hmm. So I did a little talk, I did some performance, and I read some poems as well, and then took a lot of questions from people.
So you were doing this then primarily for bishops?
There were several bishops that came to both times, from what I can tell, from what people told me of who was in the audience. It was always hard to tell who was and who was not a bishop. Some of them didn't look very bishop-y at all. I was like, that's a bishop? It looks like a hippie, if you ask me.
What does a bishop look like, Peterson?
Exactly. I don't know. But, sometimes they had this, like, colorful sort of fuchsia shirt that kind of signified they were a bishop. And their lanyards on their around their necks would indicate that they were bishops. The Archbishop of Wales, after he saw my presentation, wanted to give me his lanyard so that I can go into the bishop's sessions because he said, we need you in there and not me. But I don't think I could have passed as the Archbishop of Wales.
Did they all know each other? Like, you know, if you had attempted to walk into the bishop's inner sanctum, would they have immediately picked you out? Do you think? Like, you can't tell what a bishop looks like, but do you think they could look at you and go, that's not a bishop?
I wonder if they have, like, bishop dar, kind of like gaydar, and they're like, that smells like a bishop to me. I have a feeling they kind of know each other fairly well, although there's a lot of them. I mean, there are, like, 880 of them.
Mm-hmm.
Incredible number like that.
Mm-hmm. So what were you able to observe? Like, what did you see?
Well, I was there on campus, so there were, you know, a lot of downtime, you know, people walking from one thing to another, sitting, having coffee, conversations. They had these little discussion groups that would take place first thing in the morning where they talked a lot about sexuality, and there were a few of them that were outdoors. It was beautiful weather, so people were able to sit in groups outdoors, and I got to see a lot of people sitting and listening and talking, which I think really pissed off the media because they wanted to have, you know, a blood fest and cat fights and all of that. And it was really a lot of cordial sitting and listening. Mm-hmm. And I think it was because some of the most intense people chose not to come. And so the people who were really interested in some dialogue were there. I also got to be in the marketplace where the bishops often walk through, and this is where they sold those fabulously gorgeous-looking frocks that tempted me so. And there were a lot of stalls set up for different people, and I was surprised there were at least four different LGBT-affirming groups that were set up there engaging in conversations with people as they walked by, and there was a lot of that happening.
Hmm. So did you yourself, like, sit down and have conversations with bishops about this stuff?
I didn't talk to many bishops, no, because they were kind of segregated in a lot of ways. There were a lot of other peripheral people and priests and other clergy that were there that I got to have conversations with, and conversations with other LGBT people about some of these issues. It was interesting because it gave people a chance to strategize. I also was really, really fortunate to meet some LGBT people from parts of Africa, from Nigeria and Uganda, who came courageously to come to tell their stories, which is just so critical that, you know, stories from all parts of the world come out. And so that was really, really helpful for me to hear their stories.
Wow. Like, holy smokes. Are there actual gay groups in Nigeria and places like that?
There are definitely networks that exist. There are virtual communities online where people can't give their full names, for sure. These are courageous folks. And there was a new film that came out that they showed an excerpt of about some of their stories. And I just sat there and my mouth just dropped open just seeing these people on film telling their stories, knowing that in some cases they were putting their lives in danger, where they could have been arrested, but it was really amazing, you know, because they felt it was far more important that they be honest about who they were. And then others who, you know, even in dangerous places, because they had so much integrity, how their community welcomed them in, because they were not ashamed of themselves, so they didn't give people permission to treat them shamefully.
Hmm. Now, one of the things that went on around Lambeth was that Gene Robinson, who's the openly gay bishop of New Hampshire, who has been kind of the lightning rod for a lot of the controversy around queers in the church, he wasn't invited to Lambeth, but he went to England and did his own series of public appearances. So did you follow him around at all? Did you see any of his activities?
He was kind of unavoidable. For someone who was not invited, he was the most present person there. In fact, he actually came through the marketplace at one point. And so you couldn't miss him. And Yeah, it was very interesting because there was a whole buzz about him all the time. He was doing talks and meeting with people and that. And at one point, I almost felt that it was almost too much, that it seemed to overshadow some of the work that these other organizations, Integrity from the Canadian Episcopal Church and in the U.S. and other groups in the U.K., it seemed to overshadow their work. And I felt at times it's like, wow, I wish these folks would get a chance to speak to the press and to be more visible.
But did you personally get to talk to Gene Robinson?
I did, and it's so funny because we know all the same people. I refer to him, of course, affectionately as the gay Gene. The gay Gene in the Anglican Church. So we didn't get to connect with each other. In fact, we had competing events one night, and so we were drawing crowd off of each other. But his was an invitation only, while I was open to everyone. So I think I may have had more people as a result.
Gotcha. How was the media coverage of the whole thing? Can you give
us a
picture?
Sure. I have a friend of mine who works for the BBC, and his response was, well, we went to the Bish Bash, and there was a whole lot more bishing than bashing. And they were all disappointed because they didn't get, you know, the cat fight. It's funny because you had all these people from, you know, the Times of London and all running around trying to find a story. And in the end, it was a bunch of people sitting down talking and listening to each other, which wasn't particularly sexy.
But what about Gene Robinson's events? Did they get covered?
Very much so. Oh, yeah. I mean, anytime the man sneezed, they got covered. I mean, and I think because they thought maybe sparks would fly there. And, you know, he definitely was a celebrity walking around there. He was like a little mini rock star, which, you know, was great. I mean, that he got that kind of attention. And he's brilliant. I mean, the man is so smart, and he ties in issues of sexism and racism so beautifully and really broadens the discussion. And if anyone hasn't read his book, I suggest you run out and get it because it's got some great stuff in it. And so as a result, he got a good hearing. People in the UK in particular definitely got to hear what he had to say.
We'll hear more with Heather Kitching and ex-gay activist performer Peterson Toscano about his experiences at the Lambeth Conference and more next time on This Way Out. Thanks for tuning into This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. This week, Chris Wilson, Donna Ann Ward, Rex Walkner with Bill Kelly, and Heather Kitching contributed program material, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out is supported by charitable donations from our listeners, and we thank you. Please log on to thiswayout.org to see how you can help keep us on the air. You can also subscribe to CDs or cassettes of all our programs there. To receive our weekly email alerts, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at P.O. Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on KUCR Riverside, California, 5GFM Kadena, South Australia, WEOS Geneva and Ithaca, New York, and more than 175 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned.